What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
Sup, I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we have a ton of comic books to talk about. It's July 4th. It is our independence from not reading comic books. We are now reading comic books and talking about
We're declaring our dependence on comic books.
Right? No, that's true. That's
we are comic book dependent. Are very dependent because there's a ton of great stuff that come out this week. Why don't we kick it off, though, with a big event that DC is doing over the next 2 months called Night Terrors. This is very similar to the Future State event that they did about a year and a half ago at this point, where they took out their whole line. Future State jumped forward into the way future of the DC universe. Some of the plot lines did tie back to things that were happening in the regular plot line or teed up new characters or things like that. Here, we're ostensibly getting something the same, where the entire DC universe is flung into their nightmares, but the promise is, no, this is not an imaginary story. These are happening to the real characters. They're going to impact them in some way. So there's a bunch of them that come out this week. I'm going to read off all the titles, and then why don't we talk about what we think about this kickoff to the event as a whole, as well as any standouts. So the first book you got to read, you got to start with this one, is Night Terrors First Blood, number one from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Howard Porter. It was the framing for the event. There's going to be two more issues, I believe, of this, maybe four. Who even knows? Should have looked it up. We also got Night Terrors, The Joker, number one, from written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Stefano Raphael. Night Terrors, Batman, number one, written once again by Joshua Williamson, art by Gil March and David LaFuente. Night Terrors, Poison Ivy, number one, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Atagon Ilhan. Night Terrors, Ravager, number one, written by Ed Bryson, art by Dexter Soy. And Night Terrors, Black Adam, number one, by Jeremy Han. So that all said, what do you guys think about this one? What were your takeaways, Pete?
Well, first off, you just got to read that first one, right? And then you can kind of go with any order.
It's just exactly. Yeah. So the idea of the event is there is essentially an evil dead man called Insomnia. This is a spoiler for the first issue, but it explains what's going on. Who is looking for the Nightmare Stone, the partner. I don't know, the opposite of the Dreamstone that used to be held by Dr. Destiny, a character who's very familiar from old school Justice League fans, as well as Sandman. He shows up there in a couple of standout issues early on in the run of that. And Insomnia plunges the entire DC universe into nightmares in order to find this Nightmare Stone. It is hiding in the nightmares of either a hero or a villain. We don't know. Yes, that's what he's searching for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say I like this type of event where mostly the creative teams who are working on the books get to continue writing the books into the event, because then we get some just unique stories and interesting takes that still follow stuff that's happening in the main book without having to be fully leaving behind all the ideas. For instance, the Poison Ivy issue I thought was great. Brings these characters, Ivy at the center of this sort of love triangle, almost, maybe. I don't quite know exactly what it is, but to explore that in this dream world, I think was awesome.
Pete, what's your take so far?
Well, it's really scary, man. This is some really effed up stuff. Some of these covers are going to haunt me in my nightmares for the rest of my life. So thanks, DC. I don't know. Sometimes I'm getting tired of, like, what if we make it darker and scary? No, like more dark, like even scarier. So I don't know about that. But what I like about it is the creativity behind doing something like this and the kind of different playing field that they all have to kind of work on. So that part I enjoy, but man, some really, like, the Joker number one, like, you know, spoilers, but what happens to Batman, like, I was like, yo, this is really,
really
messed
fun.
Up.
It was funny.
Yeah, I laughed out loud.
What's
I was
funny?
Giggling. Well, let me talk about this for a second, because I do think, to me, the Joker is the one that worked the best for me, at least in this first week. I also really like this sort of events. I like line-wide events. They're fun. Like you said, Justin, I think this is very different from Future State, where that seemed ostensibly to give the teams a break so that other people could come in so that they could kind of get ahead on the schedule. Here, this mostly is the teams, so this is more a continuation of what is currently happening in the title. So like you said, the Poison Ivy thing follows directly out of the Poison Ivy run. Joker doesn't exactly follow out of Matthew Rosenberg and Stefano Raphael's run on The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing, I think is the title. But the rest of these books felt to me a little, not totally, but a little samey, just because they're all using nightmare dream logic, where I got to a point after reading four or five of them where it felt like somebody describing a dream to me, where I was like, just settle on a story, man. Just like, wow. I'm reading a story here. Stop being like, oh my God. And then there's crocodiles, and the crocodiles turned into staircases that I was walking up. And it was so weird because then I was at my school, and it's just settle on something, focus it on the characters that I care. And that to me is what happens with the Joker, where he gets what should be his fondest wish. Batman dies in the stupidest way possible right at the beginning of the book. He trips and falls and hits his face and dies.
And then, like, and slides off.
So funny.
That's funny to you?
Okay. Yes. I thought it was funny. But Alex and I are both Jokers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the Joker gets a corporate job, which is essentially his nightmare. But the actual nightmare that they're playing with here is nobody really cares about him anymore or cares about his jokes. And all he really wants is attention.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And so what I think this did really well is dives into what would be the Joker's greatest nightmare versus a lot of the rest of the books are like, what if they were in a nightmare world, which to me is a slightly different thing.
Well, I hear your criticism, but to me, I actually like the different uses of dream logic. Like, the Black Adam issue was very much like sort of a wash of images, and you're sort of just flying around, not a lot of words. Ravager was sort of being in a dream and being like, I can't figure this out, but it's all right in front of my face. Poison Ivy was like, I'm trapped here. Why is this weird? The Batman was sort of the classic, like, trying to make sense of a dream. It reminded me of that Batman the Animated Series episode where I think the Scarecrow has Bruce Batman in a dream world, and he sort of doesn't realize it. Great episode of Batman the Animated Series. But I also wanted to shout out just great art. That Batman issue, Guillaume March and David LaFuente in both stories was fantastic. Like, this type of story lets artists just get crazy because you're dreaming. You can be stretchy. You can be tiny.
I mean,
the two things.
The pearls coming at him down that kind of like hallway thing was really intense and a different kind of take on it. And it's like, man, how many different ways can we see these goddamn pearls? You know,
but when are we going to get the pearl side of the story?
Oh my God. I think what's nice is the creativity behind this. And even though it's a nightmare scenario and very scary, like that one Black Adam cover where it's like a skeleton like coming out of the skin. Oh my God, was that fucking insane? I think that overall it's a fun idea and a cool event where it's like, okay, they're all kind of stuck in that kind of night terror scenario, which is fun to kind of be like, hey, let's all do this for a little while. But what was nice is like, when I got to take breaks from that and go back to regular, DC comics like the, you know, John Kent and stuff like that, where I was like, oh my God, just made me appreciate comics and regular comics a little bit more. So it was nice to have that kind of like break in the stack for sure.
You get to wake up from your nightmare.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then come on to this nightmare of a podcast.
Hey, come on.
Anyway, good event. Very excited to follow this as it goes. Let's kick it off to a Marvel event in one issue. Captain America 750 from Marvel, written by Taki Onyebuchi, Jackson Lansing, and Colin Kelly, Stephanie Williams, J.M. DeMatteis, Dan Juergens, Cody Ziegler, and Gail Simone. Art by R.B. Silva, Carmen Carnero, Rachel Stott, Sarah Pacelli, Dan Juergens, Marcus Williams, and Daniel Lacuna. So this is finishing up Sam Wilson's run on Symbol of Truth. I forget which is Sentinel of Liberty and which is Symbol of Truth. And then we also get the penultimate chapter of the Steve Rogers story, as well as a bunch of stories about both of them throughout history. What did you all think about this issue?
I thought this was fun. We get into some of the really covering the territory that these two, this crossover has set up, like a real great Sam Wilson struggling with his identity as Captain America, which I thought was cool. Great art. And then Cap and Bucky doing their classic dance of like, are we friends? Yup, we are.
It's a short dance.
Yeah, we did that. Did you guys do that? We did that at my senior prom, and it was super fun. The are we friends? Yup, we are dance. Dog grease.
Yeah, yeah. Pippa loved that dance. It was.
Pete, what did you think about this one?
This was great. It was a great celebration of the character, great issue, and kind of like also touched upon the TV show where, you know, we see him struggling to pick up the shield a little bit. So it was kind of cool to see that. And I also liked anytime you get Misty and, you know, Captain America together like that, it's great to see them both. Yeah, and also got some old school stuff in there as well, which I thought was a great kind of package. They put a lot of stuff in a little time.
Great package.
Yeah,
it's a great package. I think the Sam Wilson story that kicks off the issue is maybe my favorite of the run so far. I just thought it was a really concrete, precise way to talk about Sam Wilson, what the shield and the costume and being Captain America means to him. There was a fair amount of tension throughout the story where I was like, oh my God, are they going to make him give up being Captain America for real? Is that what we're headed towards? Spoiler
alert. It was his choice, sort of.
Right. They don't at the end, but also the RB Silva art. There are some images in here, particularly during the fight scene towards the end, where there's just an enormous explosion. You have a tiny Sam Wilson at the top with just the shield shielding up. I thought were phenomenal, like absolutely cool. Stunning. So I was very impressed.
I also love like the way they get attacked, and he's like, I don't know who that was, but that's what it's like. I was like, wow, pretty chill. Struggling with the shield gift, but very chill about Randos blowing them up.
Yeah, no problem, but yeah.
Next up, Barnstormers number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Tula Lote. This is, oh boy, where do we even start with this? Because there's a lot of stuff going on.
A lot of twists and turns. You think, okay, this is what this is about. Nope. This is what it's about. Nope.
This was, if not one of my issues of the week, just for the wild turns that it went in. But it essentially, over the course of what seems to be two issues in one, I assume this was a Comixology book that's being collected by Dark Horse, but don't quote me on that.
But I believe that's correct.
We get to see essentially the start of like a Bonnie and Clyde type pair, but there's a lot of other things that are happening in terms of the lawman that's chasing him, in terms of perspective of who's telling the story. And also, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but it happens first in the first issue, the main character who is a pilot is having some sort of hallucinations of a robot called Mr. Baby who's stalking him, but maybe they're real and it's not 100% clear. I thought this was great, the way that, like Pete was saying, it twists and turns and you don't know what to expect from page to page.
The Mr. Baby that haunts me is real, just so if that helps.
Okay. Yeah, that was a weird name for an evil robot that's stalking you, is Mr. Baby. I kind of feel like creatively somebody was really working overtime on that name and then just said, fuck it, we're going with
Mr. It's weird Baby. Because I named my baby Mrs. Robot.
Oh, wow. That's a twist. I think it, what was great, I mean, the art's also fantastic. Really some beautiful pages, very cool designs and stuff. Loved all the characters, but man, every time I was like, okay, so this is what it's gonna, this guy, he flies around to different towns and does shows for people and they give him money. Okay, I can get it beyond that. Nope, no, it's not about that. So I was really impressed with the pace and how much action and everything that we got in this. So that was, I feel like you really get a lot for your money. You get a lot of story in comics. So I definitely think it was worth it for that, for sure.
I just watched the movie The Rocketeer before I read this. So I was like, oh, look at this fun barnstorming pilot. What mischief is he going to get up to? And then it shifts over into like Rich Bonnie, Crazy Clyde, which I thought was a fun twist. And I do think he is having sort of a psychotic break. And I'm curious how their love story will play out with that going on.
Yeah. And by their love story, you mean Mr. Baby and the pilot, right?
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Swan Mr. Songs, Baby. Number one from Image Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Simmons. This is teaming together the writer of Ice Cream Man with the artist from, Department of Truth. And it is as dark and twisted as you may expect. This is focusing on the literal end of the world and a man who's trying to find one last magazine to read to his mom, who's dying in the hospital while it happens. We've been big fans of both of these folks. How do you think they paired together?
I love this. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but this is an anthology series, right? We're going to get different Swan Song stories each issue. And what a fantastic team to bring that to life. I feel like you can see some of the W. Maxwell prints touches, the prints, fingerprints on this. As you hear little notes of Ice Cream Man in here, just the great dystopian worlds that he can create. And the art is perfect along with it. I'm unsurprisingly a fan.
I mean, first off, this is an artistic achievement. I mean, the that last panel could be just like a painting hanging up in a museum somewhere. It's unbelievable. I was just really impressed artistically with what it was doing and how it was telling the story. Really tripped out and kind of amazing. Yeah, I was just artistically blown away by it.
Yeah. Captain Marvel, Dark Tempest, number one for Marvel, written by Anne Nesenti, art by Paola Villanelli. Unlike the throwback books that we've been seeing from Anne Nesenti and others, this is set in the current Marvel continuity with Captain Marvel leading up the Avengers, but it's taking her off on a solo adventure where she's tangling with a man who explodes. What did you all think about this book?
This one was sort of, I didn't quite get all, like, it felt like a lot of disparate elements coming together, and I didn't quite know exactly what was happening. I sort of like the idea where we end up, that Captain Marvel's going to be trapped in another dimension with some annoying students, right? Is that where?
Yeah, I was like, that was like...
Did not expect this to be sort of the finishing place for this issue, but that feels like a fun starting point for the next issue.
It was weird where it's like, and this is the point of your action-packed comic where Captain Marvel talks to millennials and tries to talk them off the ledge. Like, I was just like, hey, kids, hey, listen, I was once an angsty teen. I was like, what are we doing right now? I liked the story overall. I liked the action. I love the art. I thought it was fun. I'm just a little worried about the Captain Marvel lecturing teens.
It's a little lectury, especially the like last third.
Yeah.
Peacemaker Tries Hard, number three from DC Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Steve Pugh. This is for fans of the Peacemaker TV series, as we've talked about with the previous issues. It isn't exactly set in that continuity, but last issue, Peacemaker was left for dead by Monsieur Mala, who shot him several times, I believe. And this issue, he is dealing with the fact that nobody likes him. We also get to re-meet a classic character from DC continuity here. I continue to have a blast reading this series. I think, as usual with Kyle Starks, he knows how to hit a joke. Steve Pugh's art perfectly channels John Cena without explicitly being John Cena.
It's pretty close.
I'm trying to make excuses here. But
it's not.
Pete, you're a big fan of the series, right? What do you think?
Yeah, love the series. Love this book. I think it's a great kind of continuation of the series, or it feels like it is the series, which I'm very happy about. Yeah, so if you're missing the TV show like I am, then this is a great kind of in-between. Also, we get some more fun, silly characters, which really works for him. Also, just love that whole bit where the bartender asks what he's doing, and he goes off on this tirade, and it's like, that's not what I was asking at all, man. But yeah, so just, it's got all the humor of the show, got all the action and the over-top ridiculousness, so... that kind of Red B cameo was glorious.
Yeah, love Red B. The barfly that gets killed, I thought everyone was pretty chill about that. Mm-hmm. Like, they're only... It's like if the characters from Cheers, if they were like, wow, Norm died. And they were like, well, let's order another beer. I was like, your Norm just got wrecked right in front of you. It's fucked
they
up.
They would, though. Have you ever watched an episode of Cheers? If Norm got wrecked by a guy who came in the bar, they'd be like, eh...
I've read a lot of the Cheers expanded universe novels and novellas. So like that's where I really take in my Cheers content.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where the back room can become a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
Where everybody knows your name until you die, right?
Let me say about Peacemaker, like I like this comic a lot. I love the idea of superpowered parole officer, of course, badass. We have been talking about the Unstoppable Doom Patrol book, and my take on that was like it feels too mainstream. This feels more like a Doom Patrol book, and made with Monsieur Mala being the villain here. I was like, this is a Doom Patrol book, while the other one feels like more of a mainstream Peacemaker book.
Huh.
Huh. All right. Your opinions are all valid. Untold Tales of
Could you say that, Alex? Could you say that after every review? I would love that. No, both of us, Pete. You need it too.
Absolutely.
Untold, or at least at the end of the podcast.
Untold Tales of I Hate Fairyland, number one, from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young and Dean Rankin, art by Aaron Conley and Dean Rankin. As you can tell from the title, this is two one-off tales that are not in the current continuity of the rebooted I Hate Fairyland. But in fact, when Gert made her first visit to Fairyland, Pete, you seem pretty excited, so take it away.
Yeah, I just I think this is just so fun, and they just nail this whole premise, this adorable girl who is gross and powerful and amazing, taking down this huge dude, you know, doing a little head lopping. I love it. I think it's just such a fun idea that they explore and play with in such a cool way. It's just such a fun, refreshing thing to have in your stack where it's just silly and kind of over the top in all the great ways. So, yeah, you have two really different art styles, but very cool and unique. So, again, a great package and well executed.
I love the Captain Planet pig pile that goes on in the second story. Very fun, and yeah, I agree.
X-Men Before the Fall, The Sinister Four, number one, from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Paco Medina. This is, again, as you can figure out from the title, heading up to Fall of X, the upcoming X-Men event that's going to kick off at the Hellfire Gala. Wow. Woo-hoo! At the end of the month. Now, I will say, obviously, we don't know exactly what the story is going to be, but of the Before the Fall books, this to me feels like the most essential read to understand what's going to be happening in Fall of X. There are some text pages that seem to indicate how clearly everything ties into whatever's going to happen in that event. And also, it'll get you caught up on the very complicated things that Kieran Gillen has been doing with Mr. Sinister. The short version is there's not one Mr. Sinister. There are four versions of Mr. Sinister. One of them has been banished to the pit at the end of the Sins of Sinister event, but there are still three left, and we catch up with them in this issue and find out a lot more about who they are and why they are. I really dug this. I know there's the opposite of what you want out of X-Men, Pete, but I, as usual, and I know I've said this a lot, but I feel like Kieran Gillen is the only one who really gets what Jonathan Hickman has been going for or was going for with X-Men. Justin, I want to turn it over to you because you're not the X-hater as well.
I'm an X-X-hater. If there's one thing I've been wanting in my Mr. Sinister, it's more deep, mildly confusing complexity.
Yes,
just spinning out of control.
Oh, well said, dude. Well said.
But having said that, I did like this story. But it just strikes me in this X-Men universe that we've talked about so much. It reminds me of when I was a kid, I'd be building a sandcastle. I'd be like, I'll add another moat over here, or maybe I'll put a castle over here. At some point, you got to let the wave wash it away a little bit, edit a little bit so you can come back and build some stuff up that isn't quite so all over the place. On the positive side, though, I did think this was a great story. I like sort of the love story that's maybe happening here. And the dinner dance, the great use of text, I thought. So positive story. I enjoyed the story, but please let's edit our X-Men universe a little bit more.
Man, Justin, I was almost like completely on your side and you had to ruin it with that positive thing at the end. Hey, do you hate this character? Well, what about if there were four versions of that character and they were all shittier and then you had to spend a lot of time with that one clone of a clone of a clone? This is not fun. I'm not having fun with this. The fourth generation Sinister on a dinner date, although adorable, was driving me insane because I was like, there are so many other things we should be doing right now. But okay, there's always time for a lovely dinner dance situation. Very touching. There was some really actually nice moments in here for sure. But I had a hard time enjoying them because I was like, I can't believe this is how we're spending our time. But
surely
I would like to go.
Surely you've cloned an ex before to continue dating them.
No. But I would like to go back to something Alex said. I think Karen Gillan is an amazing writer, and I love, you know, their stuff. Him. I have nothing against him. The writer. Yeah, I think done amazing work. Sometimes you get handed something, you got to be like, all right, I'll do this, I guess. But, you know, maybe it won't be my favorite project.
Wow. Oh, that was the end of the sentence. All right.
That's quite a take on Karen Gillan's station at the X office.
Why don't we move on, talk about Steelworks number 2 from DC Comics, written by Michael Dorn, art by Sammy Basri, Vicente Quifentes, and Max Rayner. This is following the adventures of Steel in the corporate arena, kind of, while people are trying to take him down and attack him. He's trying to shut down, not shut down superheroes, but make it so that superheroes are obsolete. And in this issue, the Superman family is a little, has concerns about that, let's say.
They're mad. They're mad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was just such a nice break from the Night Terror. I was just like, oh, thank goodness. Just we're going to have a a regular comic here. Nobody's having nightmares. So I was happy for that. It made it pop a little bit more. But, man, yeah, it's, you know, it kind of gets into the old, you know, chords here where it's kind of like, where is the line with the power that super beings should wield, which I don't think is a fun topic. But it was kind of funny how, like, the Superman family flew in to have a talk about it. And they're like, I don't know if you can tell, but we're kind of all in on this. Superheroes can do whatever the F they want because these kids are just picking up your hammers willy-nilly and playing with them in the background while we're trying to have a conversation. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was it's a cool idea and fun that what DC's doing here. It's I love the Steel family. Like to kind of see them talk with the Superman family. So that was a cool kind of crossover moment. Yeah. I'd say this was adorable, fantastic art.
I mean, shouts to Michael Dorn. How many writers are drawn into a different comic book that we're going to talk about in a minute?
Not many. I'm not totally into the series yet, I think. Like, I like the idea, maybe this is contrasting with you, Pete, but I like the idea of him being like, nope, we're not going to do superheroes anymore. We're going to drill into ideas. That's what we're going to do here for Metropolis. But, and maybe this is just part and parcel with it being a superhero book, but the fact that, like, they need to drill into, instead have these superhero fights, and Steel's like, I'm not going to be a superhero, while he's bashing somebody with an enormous hammer. I just want the book to make a choice. That's all at this point.
I think it's working towards that choice.
Yeah. All right. Well,
Steel working.
It's weird work. Hey. It's weird work. And so is this next book, Weird Work number 1 from Image Comics, written by Jordan Thomas, art by Shaky Kane. This is a weird book. Period.
Yeah.
Period.
I don't know. There's like, it's ostensibly a detective story, but it's set in a world where kind of anything could happen and anybody could be anybody. So very, very strange. What did you guys think about this one?
It's really just a vehicle for Shaky Kane's great artwork. love this stuff. And the vibe sort of has like a Mike Allred vibe. If you like Madman, yes. I think this is a good comic that if you want to dive into. Really interesting art, detective story set in a wild, wild world. So very fun.
The last kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
All right, brief programming note. Alex's basement is currently flooding, so he had to go deal with that. It sounded intense, so let's wish him the best as we move forward.
Hopefully, if you're living in Brooklyn right now, hopefully you're not getting flooded.
I live in Brooklyn, I'm not
Justin
home.
Gets home to a clear basement.
Yep. Fun times. Hopefully, I wish we were talking about a Namor comic or Aquaman right now, because I think that'd be like in the spirit. But let's move on and talk about Adventures of Superman, John Kent, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Clayton Henry. This is continuing the Injustice story, which has been, I would say, a big swing for John Kent, the John Kent Superman story. It's taken him. We've spent a lot of time building up so much goodwill with this character, this Superman, and all the characters, the relationships built around him. But I don't know, Pete, what do you think? I've been enjoying this Injustice storyline. It's like sort of the lightest touch multiversal story going right now.
Well, I mean, again, this was nice to not have a nightmare comic, but I hate seeing Batman and Superman fight. You know, like the kind of thing that kind of happened towards the end there, where people are arguing. It's just
it's like your parents.
I don't like seeing my parents fight. You know what I mean? So it makes me uneasy. So I don't. This wasn't enjoyable.
And just to be clear, one of your parents is like a Kryptonian, and the other sort of travels in darkness, solving crimes, right?
Yeah, you've met my parents, right?
Yeah, they're honestly lovely. That's really great, really great combination. They're almost, you know, like brave and bold. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I could see why you would say that.
Yep.
I didn't put that together till now.
Yep. The I like this. The art continues to be great. Tom Taylor, writing, really continuing to crystallize John Kent as a true Superman, I think, is what you can – the inspiring Superman for Injustice Planet. Let's move on and talk about Thor Annual Number 1 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, and Al Ewing, art by Ibram Robertson and Martin Kakalo. This – having like a – giving Thor something we all demanded, his own MODOK, named Mythos. And then in a backstory, sort of setting up some Thor stuff for the future, getting his hammer all fixed up.
All right. First off, this comic artistically is an achievement. It's amazing. The way this starts, the action, it's just the style of the art, the paneling, really impressive. Really, really impressive. Even MODOK looks cool in this comic. Like, that's how great the art is.
I'm just saying, does everybody need a MODOK? I'm full up on MODOKs.
No, you know, you're MODOK full?
I'm MODOK full. I've had a lot of them, I think.
It has been a lot of recent, for sure. Yes.
And MODOK
comes
and
goes, you know, he's mostly gone. But he's been around a lot. I understand you being over MODOK'd right now, but this version was so cool. I was just like, all right, I'll give it to you.
And then the backup, what'd you think about Thor finally getting his hammer fixed? It felt weird to see the cracky Mjolnir.
I mean, if you're just watching Ted Lasso on a loop right now, the kind of like putting the believe sign back together and the hammer coming back together, that's not a coincidence, man. You know what I mean?
I would actually argue that's the
Ted Lasso of the Marvel world.
That's the definition of a coincidence, but sure. if you happen to be doing two things at once and they make you think something similar, that's a quinky dink.
It's that kind of thing of like the kind of like gold inlay when you're putting things together and making it stronger than it's ever been. It's a beautiful philosophy and a nice kind of thing. So I thought it was kind of nice here at the end of the Thor comic.
Don't try to get me into your Ted Lasso cult that you're clearly forming at a compound outside of Baltimore, Maryland. I know you're working on it. I'm curious what Al Ewing's Thor is going to be. We're headed there almost immediately, so that's going to be fun, I think.
But you got to give a little bit more props to the art and the story. I mean, the action and the pacing. It's come on, man.
It's Kirby-esque.
It's really great. Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about Phantom Road number 5 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. This sort of a I don't know what you want to say, like an maybe interdimensional zombie mystery with a sort of plush bear hanging out suddenly. With a detective, sort of an FBI story as well, unfolding investigation of this strange occurrences. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, first we got back up the truck here and say Phantom Roads are the scariest of all the roads, right? We can agree on that. You know what I mean? Because it's, you know, roads can be scary on their own, but a Phantom Road is probably the most scariest of roads.
You mean a road that isn't it there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's do you take a wrong turn down a Phantom Road and you're going to regret it because it's not on the map.
Yeah, and don't think it's going to be a shortcut because it's not.
Yeah, I once did that and turned down a dotted line, and that was a mistake on a map.
Yeah.
This is back before phones.
Oh, I hear you, man. I hear you. There was life before phones.
That's
right. Yeah, this is like crazy on top of crazy, and I'm kind of like losing my mind a little bit because like I can understand like the story the way it is, but then when you add a whistling bear for no reason, it really pulls me out of the story and takes away from the intensity a little bit because it's like there's a cartoon bear walking through the middle of this zombie apocalypse kind of thing. So it's like, what's real? What's not? Is this all kind of a night terror, if you will?
I think that cartoon bear is going to end up being part of the scary side, Pete. I don't think it's taking you out of it. I think it's going to pull you right back in.
Okay, well, you don't think it's a little weird that, like, okay, there's all these zombies, but then there's a whistling bear that the zombies don't seem to acknowledge at all or try to attack?
If you had to break it down, is it the unsettling part, the whistling or the bear?
That's tough, man, because the combination is what really freaks me out. Mm. But, yeah, I'm going to go with bear.
There it is, because we can whistle.
Yeah, we sure can.
See?
Wow.
Scary. Really scary.
Now you're just showing off.
Yep, a little bit. I can barely whistle, honestly. That was I can't believe that
get
came
it
out.
Barely whistle.
Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 7 from Boom Studios, written by Jason Aaron, art by Layla Del Duca. This story is sort of you never know what you're going to get with it. It is a love story. It's in a much expanded world. We have our two sort of star-crossed lovers getting together. They have formed this is the story of their utopia with the its impending doom hanging over the whole story in this issue. Pete, what do you think about this cuddle puddle?
Yeah, the hippie free love zone, the Gorgonzola of love there. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's the tension underneath all of it is interesting. I love the art style. It's kind of this kind of tripped out kind of thing. But the bad stuff's going to win, I feel like. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there's definitely that's implied because we see a lot that it's we know it's coming apart because of the narration. But they've formed a utopia called Golganooza, which is a place where you can be yourself and do whatever you want. It's a really tailored utopia to their beliefs, which I think is really cool.
Gorgonzola is what you're saying.
No, Golganooza. I love I love a good blue cheese, but this is Golganooza.
Mm. I do love good blue cheese.
Don't you? Just great on a salad with Italian dressing.
Oh, dude, classic salad. Upstate. No, I'm thinking about dipping wings and stuff in there. I mean, come on, dude.
Interesting. I've never dipped. Would you dip your wing into that?
Into blue cheese?
Yeah, I dip it. Yeah. I dip my wings into just ice cold water.
Dip
ice
into cold blue water. Cheese?
Yum.
Oh, that's gross, man. You rinse your food before you eat it?
I love it. It's like the opposite of hot sauce. It's just literally washed.
You're washing away the flavor.
Yum, yum. Water. My favorite flavor. Let's move on and talk about Clobbering Time number 5 from Marvel by Steve Scroggie on the writing and artist.
The Scroach.
Bringing a big story to a close here, which is very fun. The art was so good in this issue.
Yeah, the art's the real hero here.
We finally reveal we have Dr. Doom's face handily redacted out of the comic. But lots of fun stuff here. The use of Galactus here, I forget sometimes that the idea of Galactus is that he was the only survivor of the universe that occurred right before the Big Bang. And he was somehow pulled over given cosmic powers.
Speeding. He was pulled over for speeding.
He was pulled over for speeding. Well, I mean, he went so fast, he broke into a whole new universe. Yeah. And he's then given the power / curse of eating planets. So sort of a strange story when you think about it.
Yeah, because it's like he's the only one who survived, and now he's killing worlds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I get it. When you're hungry, what do you think, Doctor? What do you think Galactus dips his planets in from a sauce perspective? Is it a blue cheese? Oh, is it water?
I mean, it depends. I mean, if it's a lava world, you know what I mean? You would think a cool, refreshing, like blue cheese or a ranch would be nice. You know what I mean?
I want to see Galactus on Hot Ones dipping dipping planets in increasingly spicy sauces.
That would be amazing. Galactus on Hot Ones. Oh, my God. That would be the great. I watched the shit out of that show, by the way. I've seen every episode.
Oh, it's very fun. And, you know, people always go too far. Though, who did I hear went on it and just, like, ice cold ate every single one? Was it John Mulaney? Just, like, truly no reaction. Just, like, nothing.
Yeah, yeah, Mulaney did it, but also there have been some like really impressive like women going on there and just like destroying the wings and being like, "What?"
I'm sorry. Jennifer Lawrence went on and like had like an very emotional experience. It looked like when I was
there. Yeah, some people they say it's like, you know, they're kind of like high.
Yes, I mean, you can eat something so hot that you like transcend. That's how Galactus went from the last universe to this one. Is he ate a very hot wing? And just fully transcended. But anyway, I do like this comic. I would love to see more Steve Scrooge doing some standalone work like this. Really great.
I agree. It's a fun kind of little pocket he gets operated in. The amazing kind of cameos. We get the Doombots. We get Galactus. Just so much cool stuff going on. It's just such a fun thing. Even the kind of little, hey, that's my line moment. I'm having a blast with this. Every issue was a banger.
Agreed. Let's talk about No One Number 4 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Brian Buccioletto, art by Geraldo Borges. This is sort of another corner of the Massiverse, the ever-expanding Massiverse. This is almost, let me know what you think about this, a Mark Millar story via Massiverse. It's like Mark Millar where their ideas are actually taken care of a little bit, and it's not just
it's a little
what's the
better
coolest
than,
version?
Yeah,
this
yeah,
feels
yeah.
like it has some depth to it, and is just
great.
A fun new corner of the Massiverse dealing with like the press, superheroes, where all that sort of all those things cross over.
Yeah, I love the art style. It's a nice amount of action and story, and I'm intrigued by it enough to keep reading, and it kind of like it keeps me. I think it does a good enough job of being like, you know what this is. You're getting we see different kind of parts of it. So I think that they do a good job of keeping all of these kind of things moving in an interesting direction. And still kind of keeping the overall story afloat. So, I'm impressed with it.
Agreed. Survival number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Sean Lewis, art by Brendan Everett. This, a bunch of survivalists go up into the woods, and whoops, there's vampires. Vampires in the woods. It's survivalists versus vampires. Some fun twists and turns here. I like some of the pages are really have interesting layouts to them. Just great horror stuff in the middle of nowhere, which is where I am right now in the woods. So, you know, I'm terrified.
Oh, man. Yeah. Hopefully you don't run into some vampires and some talking heads. I think crazy intense last page, interesting survival story, really solid art, creepy ass vampires. Fun times. I'll keep reading. I'm having a good time with this.
Me too. Let's move on and talk about Daredevil number 13 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Marco Cicchetti. And big news, this comic, well, is called Daredevil now, but it's with next issue, number 14, it becomes Running Around with Naked Foggy is the new title of this comic, because you got Foggy running around nude.
Wait, the title is not going to be Running Around with Naked Foggy.
It is. Check the solicitations. That's what
it's still going to be Daredevil, man. Come on.
No, it's Running, though, with an apostrophe, so you got to Google it. It's sort of a fun romp where Foggy's just naked. He's like, I'm a lawyer.
Dude, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to hell, but you don't get to keep your clothes.
I learned that in this issue. As Daredevil, this is actually where... being sort of flip about an actually very serious meditation on Daredevil's faith, what drives him. We get a reveal here that he has not been guided by any sort of god. He's been just guided by another, a different demon behind the fist.
Yeah. Duped.
The sister of the beast.
Religion against him.
You dupe devil is what we're talking about here. And it's a really, like, Chip Zdarsky is doing such a great job of being very straight with Matt Murdock's faith and sort of taking it at its on its face and then putting him through the paces with what that means. And this issue is still part of the previous storyline, continuing Mark of the Beast, I believe is the name of it. When this feels like a whole new thing, Daredevil's literally in hell fighting demons. He saves Foggy, Stick, and a bunch of other people who get pushed out of hell naked again. So I assume
I don't know why that's so important to you, but you know, I think that this is what's interesting is like you know Zdarsky here is exploring his faith and kind of using that against him as a weakness, which is interesting because sometimes Daredevil is more religious than other times. This one it seems like it's turned up a little bit. Which is, you know, an interesting part of the character. It's definitely a cool thing to explore for sure. But then when he gets his, like, faith knives out of his head and he makes, like, little horns, that's where I was kind of like, what are we doing here? And then he loses an arm for some reason, but that doesn't seem to matter because it's not bleeding. It's just like a action figure arm that pops off, it seems like.
Yeah.
So I felt like this went a little too far in that aspect, but I did like the fact that he finally went to go rescue his friend Foggy, and Foggy was like, I knew you come, and I was like, oh, Foggy, I hate to break it to you, but he kind of just stumbled across you, buddy.
It was a total accident. It's a Foggy accident. Do you think all lawyers are this care this much about their partners?
I don't know. But you would like to think that if that Matt Murdock cares about Foggy because Foggy clearly cares about Matt Murdock, and you would like a relationship to have both, you know, it go both ways. You know what I mean?
Like, do you think Celino and Barnes, the injury attorneys in New York City, famously, one of them did die. Do you think Celino's like, I'm going to hell to rescue Barnes and pull his naked ass?
I hope so. I really do. I hope so, because maybe Selena realizes that he needs Barnes. You know what I mean?
They sadly broke up right before Barnes. I actually don't really know what I'm talking about. Let's move on to talk about I Hate This Place, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Artyom Topalin. Like, this is the final issue of this book. That's I think the first trade has come out. There's a second trade coming up this fall. Man, this is such a great comic, like a wild place where ghosts and time travel and all these different genre ideas are at play together, centered around this relationship between these two characters who inherit some property and realize it sucks from top to bottom. But yeah. Great story. Loved how it ended. Like the sort of tip of the hat to a future story. One of my faves.
Yeah, I agree. I really loved how this ended. I just think that, like, some amazing character designs. I love that creepy ass, like, skull monster kind of thing. Really thought amazing. This is an intense issue, but really stuck the landing. I want more from this team. It's really very cool and interesting, and I was impressed with it.
Agreed. Let's move on to Hairball number 4 from Dark Horse Comics by our guy Matt Kint, art by Tyler Jenkins. In this story, a cat has been sort of with this girl, Bestie is the name of the cat, her whole life. And so her growing up and unraveling the mystery of what Bestie is. Pete, how did you feel about this issue?
Another banger-ish. I love this comic. Suck it, Chad. I think that, cats are kind of like a demigod for sure. You know, you got to worship or die is really what it comes down to. You either love the crap out of that cat or it's going to be the death of you. So I think this comic really does a great job of understanding what it's like to, I wouldn't say own a cat, but live with a cat. You know what I mean? So
do you ever own a cat, Pete, or does the cat?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah, the cat owns you, bro.
And you're a cat guy, famously.
Famously, for sure. But yeah, just amazing art, fantastic series. You know, I love how it leaned into the art and not so much the words, you know what I'm saying? Like, let the art tell the story. And those, the cat's eyes, like, especially with that one eye, does that. Oh, it's creepy as shit, man. Some real creepy
indeed
shit.
A great creepy read. I love this series. Let's talk Spider-Man number 10 from Marvel Comics, written by Dan Slott and Christos Gage, art by Mark Bagley. Classic Spidey team on this book that is ostensibly a book about Peter Parker Spider-Man. But since issue 7, this has basically been a who is Spider-Boy?
Spider-Boy!
Spider-Boy is hanging pretty hard here. We're getting some classic Dan Slott Spider stuff. Now, we speculated, there's a big mystery about who Spider-Boy is, and I think we speculated here on this podcast a couple months back that Spider-Boy is, because Spider-Boy's whole thing is like, he's like, I'm your sidekick, I've been here the whole time, and Spider-Man's like, no, you're not. I don't know who you are. No one knows who you are. Spider-Boy, it was recently announced, is getting his own spin-off comic, but I think we're going to get the reveal of the mystery probably next issue is my guess, because we get a big clue here, something that we, I think, speculated and guessed maybe correctly, that Spider-Boy is the spider that bit Peter Parker, who, as Peter Parker took on the qualities of a spider, the spider that bit him also took on the qualities of a human and became Spider-Boy. Because Spider-Boy, in this issue, bites a dude. Bites Electro.
Bites a dude. Straight up bites a dude.
He's got spider teeth.
And Spider-Man,
I think,
had
he's
that
a spider.
Awkward moment of like, dude, you just bit somebody. Are they dead now? He's like, nah, chill out, Spider-Man. It's
cool. Everybody, when you bite people, it's fine. Oh,
man,
nobody cares.
Biting people up in this piece. Yeah, I feel like this is, you know, kind of a classic Dan Slott-ish. There's a lot going on, a lot of talking, a lot of fun jabs, a lot of back and forth. You know, Dan Slott's having a great time. Then you got some fun Electro old school costume kind of stuff. So it's a youngness to it, a lot going on, kind of a classic Dan Slott-ish. And you want to know who you I think Spider-Boy is? I think it's Dan Slott. That's who I think it is.
That'd be a twist. You know, writers love to write themselves into their stories. Pete, do you like Spider-Boy?
It seems a little annoying, but you can't go around biting people. You know what I mean?
That's true. You're sort of focused on it from a public safety standpoint. I meant more as a comic book character. But but that's fine if you're like, no, it's I'm concerned for the people around him.
I mean, I'd be pissed if like if I was like had to live in comic book world and then like had to worry about like, okay, sure, like all these superheroes are real, but then like some random boy biting me would really kind of be the line. You know what I mean?
Wow, great to know where your lines are, Pete, all the time. Yeah. I think he's more spider than boy is my take. But let's jump over to torrent number 5 from Image
Comics.
How
are you feeling about it, dude? Do you feel like it's cool?
Spider-Boy?
It's a good look? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's always tough when a character is introduced and it's all about their central mystery. And it's, is there enough underlying the mystery for this character to continue on where he's getting his own series? So we will definitely have the opportunity. So curious about that. So I'm cautiously interested, I guess I would say.
Okay.
But torrent number 5, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Justin Greenwood. Goops. This comic, right over the pee plate, the what I call the garbage plate in a lot of ways, because this is like a Punisher, a superhero that becomes a Punisher, essentially, going on a quest for revenge after her identity is exposed and her son is killed. Her husband and son are both killed, right? And this is the final issue of the this series, but again, teeing up perhaps a future story. Pete, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved to see this main character be such a badass and like tore through a bunch of boss level type action. I mean, holy shit, just people dropping everywhere. I thought this was really cool, very badass, loved it. And the art is really very enjoyable. Love the kind of character design. It's got kind of like a cool boxiness to it. I also thought the kind of preview we got in the back. Oh, Pip. What's up, Pip? The preview of the Bluebird people was also fun. So total package. You got a lot in this comic. I'd say it's worth it. And hopefully this isn't the last of Torrent.
How'd you feel about the final choice? And this is a bit of a spoiler of just killing that dude.
Yeah, just, you know, sometimes you know, in real life, I don't think you can get away with it. But in comics, it's a safe place to kill people. And I thought, yeah, like after everything she's been through, why not? You know what I mean?
Interesting. You're down with this neck break, but a spider boy biting a neck. Bridge too far.
Yep.
Let's jump over and talk Mosley number 5 from Boom Studios, written by Rob Guillory, art by Sam Lofty and Rob Guillory. This comic, sort of a cross between a Thor-type character who is going up against the AI technological nightmare that has taken over the world. Pete, what did you think about this one?
I love this. I love Mosley. He's kind of like a grizzled, kind of over it, old school dude. He's got a magical hammer. You know what I mean? Like, I love the action. I thought it had a real nice ending. I love the sup guy at the end there. It was pissing all over the place. You know, we got a nice saying goodbye to your magical hammer moment. Great character design. Love the art. Amazing story. What's not to like here, buddy?
Agreed. This was sort of a wild story in the combination of high tech and mythical elements. I a lot of sort of fairy tales. It came to an end and everybody put away their magical items and went back to life with just a guy peeing to be.
I mean, that's the reality. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure when we're done with this, you're going to go back to a kid peeing. You know what I mean?
Wow. Truer words have never been said on this podcast. Let's jump over to Doctor Strange number 5 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Pasquale Ferry. Doctor Strange is going to a wedding. His wife's...
just like us. We go to weddings. We go to weddings. We do things like normal people.
We're like Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
This is his wife Clea's mom getting remarried to some people that tried to kill and successfully kill Doctor Strange. So that's awkward, I think, just from the wedding.
It's got to be awkward.
Yeah. Your greatest enemy, the
seating dread arrangements have got to be tough. You know what I mean? At a wedding
the table.
Like that.
Exactly.
Where do you sit? Dormammu. You know what I mean?
And Dormammu, who is the officiant who bails when the going gets tough. And he's sort of a dick about it. Like the way he was is not nice. He talks shit. You don't talk shit in the
whole time. Like, if you're going to officiate a whole wedding, man, you got to like tone that down.
Tone it down a little bit, Dormammu. Yeah. But you save it for the like a best man speech situation. That's when you talk shit.
Or like after the ceremony's over, it's sit in the back, have some drinks, and then talk shit. But like, come on.
Just roast. So a little FYI for anyone inviting Pete to their wedding. He's going to sit in the back and roast you. He's going to sit in the back and roast you on the way out. So watch out. If you spot him in the back, he's roasting you. You call this salmon? Is what he said? In the back? Huge news there. I love this Doctor Strange series. I mean, it's no surprise. I'm a big Jed McKay head. Very happy to see him getting more and more work at Marvel. But I really like this, the Doctor Strange and Clea being like together, little bit of tension, mystery, like is she just killing people who killed her husband? They have a great edge to their relationship, but Pasquale Ferry's art, loving it.
Come on, dude.
Come on.
That's why we're here. I mean, the art is beautiful. It is just unbelievable. I mean, some just unbelievable panels that you want to just like turn into posters and put them on your wall. Just absolutely gorgeous. And I like how vain Doctor Strange is. You know what I mean? Like they're making fun of being in front of the mirror for so long. Just, this is fun. This is a really fun comic. And it's just such a bright kind of, you know, and all the dark stuff and the night terrors, this one really kind of stands out as a nice kind of treat.
Agreed. Speaking of treats, let's move over to a tree, which makes apples, which is our favorite treat. Blood Tree, number 6. That's a shout out to Alex, who's like hopefully not up to his ankles in water right now.
Oh, man.
Blood Tree, number 6 from Image Comics, written by Peter J. Tomasi, art by Maxim Simic. This is a series about a serial killer that puts angel wings on his victims, and the man who has some struggles in his own life, both with his family, his child, who is maybe showing some darker tendencies, and some revelations about his parentage. This brings the series to a close. What did you think about this, Pete?
man, I really enjoyed how this ended. You know, sometimes in these comics, you think like, and I'm spoiling the shit out of this right now, but you know, you have this like very interesting bad guy that they don't want to kill off because he's such a great part of the story. So happy he died. I fucking loved it.
He didn't die at the end, I don't think.
He got shot three times and then dragged away, but, you know. I don't know. I'd like to think you don't come back from that. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, he got arrested, I think, was a part of the move here from our detective, because the guy was like, kill me. I mean, I think the tension we're dealing with here is he's the son of a killer that he didn't realize. And the story is all about the serial killers killing other people who are descendants or related to killers to try to, like, purify the bloodline, the blood tree, basically. And so he's trying to be out here, and he stops himself from killing this killer to prove that, like, hey, my genetics, my lineage is not defining. And then we get this great twist at the end that maybe his son is, again, like, doing some stuff that he's worried about, especially given the revelation that he is descended from a killer. So this really came together in a nice sort of all the threads in a nice knot at the end, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, messed up last panel. It's really impressive. Very interesting woven this story. I was super impressed with that. It's definitely, for six issues, it's a heck of a ride, worth checking out for sure.
Agreed. Maleficent number 3 from Dynamo. Oh yes,
I'm just gonna say, really love the art style.
There it is. Maleficent number 3 from Dynamite by Sue Lee. This is something that Alex has been loving. This issue, really, like, we thought it was going to be more of an anthology series with standalone stories about Maleficent, the villain from Sleeping Beauty movie and story. But it's really sort of an ongoing tale about some people that have come to Maleficent to challenge her, or who are lost in the woods, and what happens to them. This focusing on a boy that she turned into a cat, and her raven that continues to taunt him in cat form. Pete, you love cats. Meow.
So this is my favorite issue of the week. This was my favorite comic. I loved this comic. This was so amazing. What an amazing issue. Almost no words. Such a cool Bobcat versus Crow story. You think you've seen them all, but man, classic this one fight. Adds a nice little kind of angle and twist. So it's such a deep, meaningful, it's a profound artistic story on full display here. I loved it. I loved it because, like, you know about the before, about who the Bobcat is, but even if you just not even knowing that, it's still a beautiful story. You know, this cat versus bird thing that you, if you have a cat, you know, is real. It's real. They hate each other and always looking to take each other out. So, I think this was such an awesome idea and so well executed. Just really impressive artistically. I agree. Was so blown away by it.
Beautiful storytelling, especially Sue Lee doing the writing and the art behind it. So really like that. Let's talk Fantastic Four number 9 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Ivan Fiorelli.
No, I just wanted, before we move on, because this is such a cool thing, I'm really hoping that this is where the future of comics is going, where it's going to be
no words,
less words, more artistically driven. You know what I mean? Where you can walk away maybe with a different idea than what they sent out to, you know what I mean? Because, like, this is such an interesting story. I kind of want to run up to people, hand it to them, and be like, what do you think this is about? You know,
like, you want to run up to people, like, surprise them?
Yeah. Yeah. And be like, have you read this? What do you think of this? You know,
strangers on the street.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just so, I hope it's the future, because it's really just such an interesting thing that I think is a little different or against what kind of maybe the comic started. So I'm really hoping this is where we're going to go.
Well, let me say, Pete, I've just been doing a little research here. You should check out this thing, if you like comics without words, called Paintings. I guess it's like comics, but there are no words, and they're big. So you have to go to a building.
Wow.
And
all right. Well, I'm going to look into that, because that sounds perfect.
I think it's the future.
That's what I'm looking for.
Or the past, the deep, deep past. Fantastic Four number 9 from Marvel Comics, as I said, written by Ryan North, art by Ivan Fiorelli. I think this Ryan North run on Fantastic Four is a Hickman-esque run. Like, it's a little bit meta. It's diving into the Fantastic Four, and including Alicia Masters, who's the narrator of this issue, and really getting into what makes them tick, the different, and just using so many different ways to look at these characters, really smart ways, using comics and the medium to tell a great story, really well thought out, twists and turns. I've been loving every issue of this.
Well, that's great. I do think that this, you know, it gets a little meta here. You know what I mean? You got Grimm sitting around reading a comic. I mean, it must be nice. You know what I mean? That guy's got all the time in the world. He can just sit around and read comics. You know, he doesn't have to worry about fighting crime or anything.
Do you feel like Alicia loves him because he is like a big lump of clay?
Maybe. I don't know why she loves him, but I'm happy that she does. I like them together a lot.
That's beautiful. While we're talking love, maybe we jump over to Love Everlasting number 9 from Image Comics, written by Tom King, art by Elsa Chartier. This has been an ongoing story of our main character, Joan, who has been in love. It's examining love and different what love means from different times in your life. This is about her being married. The husband is sick, diagnosed with a lung cancer, I believe, and their child's wedding and where it ends up. And, you know, this is Tom King's big dive into romance comics and what they mean. And this issue, devastating end, I thought. Really well done. And it's not, you know, there are some supernatural or sort of interesting magical elements potentially to this. This just sort of stands alone as a heartbreaking, devastating story about life and love.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting a little worried about Tom King, you know. Are you all right? Did somebody hurt you? You know what I mean? Like, because he loves the sad love story. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just, you know, he sits in that kind of those tough moments, man. And it's heartbreaking as shit. But you got to say the art is super tight bananas. Just really unbelievable. But yeah, this sad love story keeps on going.
It does, just like all of the love stories in our lives, which, think about that. And finally, let's close it out talking about Star Trek Defiant number 5 from IDW, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Angel Unzueta. This, bringing the, we've talked a lot about this Star Trek universe, how it's like these two books are these, all the characters you love from every iteration of Star Trek together on different ships. This is sort of the X-Force of Star Trek teams. With Worf, Ro, you got Lore here, Spock's in here being sort of like making big decisions. I teased this earlier by saying we have Worf here, played by the actor Michael Dorn, who is a writer on Steelworks. Pete, what'd you think about Star Trek? I know maybe you're not a big Star Trek guy.
Yeah, I mean, these Star Trek books that we've been talking about continue to be like a great examples of continuations from the stories that we know from the television and movies. So they've been really well done, very impressive. Love the art style where you know the characters, but the art's a little different, but you still know who it is in kind of a cool artistic way. As someone who doesn't love a Star Trek, maybe as much as others, I'm still enjoying these comics a lot, you know. So it's doing it a service, and hopefully it feeds into more people checking out Star Trek and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think this was a great issue.
I agree. I've been liking these. If you're like a huge Next Generation or Deep Space Nine fan, like, this is like a great continuation of those series in a comic book form. We're setting up for a crossover event called Day of Blood, which sounds cool, right?
Yeah, it does.
Sounds intense for our nice Star Trek universe. So I agree. I've been enjoying these a lot. Looking forward to more. And that's it for the stack. Folks, if you want to check us out, check us out. We do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, which you can find on a bunch of different outlets, including
apologies,
our YouTube channel.
Except for today, because it's July 4th, but
it is the 4th of July.
Otherwise, it's pretty regularly every Tuesday. Yeah,
we are on the reg. So please check that out. We have a ton of other podcasts, our Riverdale podcast. We have our Marvel Vision podcast, currently talking about the show Secret Invasion. Our DC podcast, Sons of a Gun, talking about DC news and everything that's going on over there. So please come. We have a huge backlog. Check out all of them at comicbookclublive.com. Shouts to Alex, who hopefully is doing all right. And let me just quote him and say that all of your opinions
are
valid.
Yeah, Alex, hopefully your basement is okay.
Yeah. All of your opinions are valid. Yeah.
And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Justin, all of your opinions are valid. And also, if you're like, man, you guys have a lot of things to check out, is there one place we can go? Yeah, go to the website, comicbookclublive.com, where we have everything there for all your nerdy needs. So, yeah, check that out.
Nerdy needs. See you next time.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.